Feels like I've been gone a long time. You know, what seems like it should have been a few weeks ago, I was looking at this passage in Mark, which we're in Mark chapter 7, by the way. I was looking at this passage in Mark thinking, oh, this will be a great four-ish part series on legalism and rules and then I preached the first one, and then I went on vacation for a week. And then I preached the second one, and then we had a week of children's Sunday, and then we had a youth Sunday. So, feels like it's been a little broken up. And so now I'm going to preach this one, then I'm going to preach the next one, and then I'm going to go on vacation. So, anyway, so just in case your brains are not immediately back to Mark 7, because it's possible that you've been out for a few weeks, like I have, to remind us where we've been is Jesus and the disciples are out, and the disciples eat, and the Pharisees see them eat and say, hey, you guys are eating, and you're not washing your hands properly before you eat. And so they bring that to Jesus, and Jesus talks to them about that what God really wants is not us just a bunch of rules. What God really wants is our hearts, and he wants us close to him. So then Jesus takes another tack with the scribes and Pharisees there, and he says, look, you know, you guys are so into the rules that you find ways to let the rules help you not honor God. And the example he uses is Korban, and where they say, everything that I have, all of my money, all of the resources that I have is Korban, which means it's dedicated to God, which means I love God so much that I have given everything that I have for him. So my parents who are sick, I can't help them because I've given everything I have to God. Isn't that beautiful? You know, everything I have is God's, so I can't help the poor. Everything that I have is God's, so I can't do anything except what I want to do. And so Jesus says, you have taken these rules and these laws and you've twisted it around and pretended like you are actually doing what God wants, and yet you're actually doing the opposite of what God wants. And so that's where we are in Mark chapter 7. So Jesus is going to clarify a few things here. And so he calls the crowd together, verse 14. It says, after he called the crowd together, that's what I just told you. You got that, right? After he called the crowd to him again, he began saying to them, listen to me, all of you, and understand. There is nothing outside the man which can defile him if it goes into him, but the things that proceed out of the man are what defiles the man. Now, that's not much of a parable, if you ask me. And Mark is going to tell us here in a minute that the disciples thought this was a parable. It doesn't seem like much of a parable. Mark calls it a parable, but it doesn't seem like much of a parable to me because parables, you know, are like a story and you have to figure out the meaning of it. But if you listen to what Jesus says here, there's not a lot of meaning to figure out. He says, you know, nothing outside can defile a man. It's only what comes out of us. And we understand that. We know that that's the way that it works. You know, real godliness doesn't come from washing our hands properly. It just doesn't. Real godliness doesn't come from what you eat or what you don't eat. Real godliness doesn't come from what you watch or don't watch or what you listen to or don't listen to or what you read or don't read. Real godliness doesn't work that way. It doesn't come from the rules around us. Now, I've been watching since we moved to Oregon, and Oregonians have some pretty nice cars. You've probably noticed. I mean, they have BMWs and Lexuses. Is that really the plural of Lexus? Is it Lexuses or Lexi or mini Lexus automobiles? I don't know. Anyway, we have those. We have Mercedes. We have Ferraris. I'd never seen a Ferrari before. I saw a Lamborghini since I've been here. You know, we have all kinds of incredible vehicles. In fact, I've always wanted a Lexus. I love Lexus. I mean, it's a beautiful car. What I've noticed since I've been here and been around a bunch of them is that people who have Lexuses tend to get propelled around town by those vehicles. Have you noticed that? That they have these things that they use, and what do you call them? Keys. And they put them in, and they turn them like this, and the motor starts. And then they have this thing that comes out of the dash, and they use that to determine the direction of the vehicle. Have you seen these? They have pedals on the floor, and one makes it go, and one makes it stop. And I've noticed that whenever they're driving around town in these, that when they come to red lights, they stop. And when they come to green lights, they go. You've noticed it. And whenever they're wanting to turn, they have these lights on them that blink on and off in the direction that they're going to turn. But sometimes they just blink and nobody turns. Have you seen that? And what I've noticed is that all of these Lexuses, they all follow these rules. And I got to thinking, my car does all that. I think my car is a Lexus. You've seen my car. The reason that somebody very kindly would say, dream on, is because we all know that it is not these things that make a car. We know what it does, that these things don't make a car a Lexus. What makes a car a Lexus is something on the inside, something different, something deeper. That's a comical one. How about this one? You know, it's Father's Day. It takes more than some sperm to make a dad, doesn't it? We know that. It's not that hard to father a child. I mean, you just have to entice and charm the right girl into bed, hit it at just the right time in the ovulation cycle, boom, you got a kid. That's the way it works. You may pay child support. You may even go to a few games. That doesn't make you a dad. That doesn't even come close. Because we know that procreating doesn't really have anything to do with being a dad. That's why you can adopt kids and you can be a real dad. Because we know that there's something more to that. We know that being a dad has very little to do with just following rules or legalistic things. We know that being a dad is loving your kids from your heart. A real dad loves his kids, and you know, you play with them, and there's no magic formula for that. You know, for some people, it means you go to a lot of basketball games. Excuse me. Did I really do that? For some people, it means that you play chess. For other people, you know, it means that you wrestle around with them a lot. But there's no formula to it. A real dad disciplines his kids, and there's no formula to it. You know, you don't say, "Hey, you've got to spank your kids," or "You've got to put them in timeout," or "You've got to ground them," or "You have to make them say sir." There's no rules about that stuff. I mean, discipline is just shaping the lives and the behavior of your kids, whatever it looks like. It's love. That's what makes a dad. I mean, it's Father's Day, and we don't remember our dads because they followed all the rules. We remember our dads because they loved us. Faith is like that. You know, it's not about following all the rules. That's not what makes us. It's about loving God, and the truth is we get that. And we get that faith is more than just skin deep. And, over the last few sermons that I've done, some of you have said, that much. You just say, "Hey, I get it." I don't know if you're saying, "Hey, I get it, let's go on," or if you're saying, I get that. I like it. I appreciate that. But, you know, you're saying, hey, I get that the faith is more than rules. Rules are not our faith. Nobody really has a problem with that. Nobody has a problem with what Jesus says here. And part of the reason is, what do we care about dietary laws? You know, we know, we don't actually, honestly, we don't care much about the law in general. You know, we understand we're not under Jewish law, and we're glad. You know, when you go out to Red Lobster, you don't have to decide which fish you can eat and which you can't. I had a cheeseburger last night. That's unclean, by the way. Good stuff. You know, we don't have to worry about that. We're not bound by sacrificial law. We don't have to keep up with all of that stuff. So it's easy for us to agree with Jesus. And we understand nothing outside your body can defile you. We get that. We kind of glaze over the second part of what Jesus says. But whenever Jesus says it's only the things that proceed out of us that defiles us, we kind of glaze over that. But here's what we do with this passage. Sometimes whenever we read this passage, we just kind of dismiss it because it's not even really on our radar. You know, we don't worry about dietary laws, and so we say that's something that the Jewish people needed to hear, and we just kind of go on. Or some people just celebrate, woohoo, no more rules, and they live like they please. You know, and that's not a good thing either. One other thing that people do with this is they take and they substitute a new set of rules for the old ones. You know, it works kind of like this. You know, you take little toddlers to the store, and you don't want them to steal stuff, right? Unless that's your gig. But you don't want them to steal stuff, so you go into the store, and you say, put your hands in your pockets. And so they stick their hands in their pockets. And you do that not because they're terrible people, anything like that. You just don't want their little wandering hands. So you say, stick your hands in your pockets. That's the rule. Or we don't want to have an affair, so we make a rule and we say, I'll not be alone with anybody of the opposite sex ever, except for my wife. And we make rules. You know, we just substitute new. I don't ever want to get drunk, so I'll never take a drink. And the reason that we do that is we genuinely don't want to offend God. And so we make rules to keep us a long ways away from offending God. We know what God has said, and so we want to stay far away from those things so that we can honor God as best we can. And so we make up new rules. Just like the Pharisees did. That's why they did it. They wanted to keep us away from offending God. And even though we don't intend to, eventually those rules become laws, and they become the things that we use to judge other people by. And we start talking about faith as if faith is really just the obedience to a bunch of rules, and we list them out. Some of them are biblical rules, good rules, and some of them are bad rules. But they're rules nonetheless. Now let me give you an example, you know, of how we substitute rules for the real thing. In just a couple of weeks, we'll be celebrating Independence Day, a great day for our country, and an exciting day as an American. But that Sunday, I think it's the 3rd, Christians around the nation will start talking about our country, and they'll start talking about how we need to become a more Christian nation. And they'll lament the days gone by that we were a Christian nation, and we'll close our eyes and we'll imagine what it would be like to be a more Christian nation, a nation where morality really matters, a nation where baseball teams in the community would honor Sunday mornings and not schedule games and not schedule practices. A country where our schools, instead of having winter and spring break, would have Christmas and Easter break again. We long for the day whenever you'd go to a high school football game and they'd begin it with prayer. You know, we say, this is what it would be like to be a Christian nation, where every baby that was conceived was wanted and not aborted. A Christian nation where the name of Jesus is not a curse word. And we close our eyes and we imagine all of the rules that we wish our country lived by. And we think that would be a Christian nation. But you see what we've done? We've just taken a list of rules and we've said, this is what it is to be a Christian. This is what it is to be a Christian nation. And in the end, we're no closer to being a Christian nation than we were before. Because following Christ is not about a certain bracket of rules. Following Christ, no matter how good those rules are, following Christ is about loving and following Jesus. Now I know. This is kind of shaky ground here, right? It's the ground that Jesus was on. Because, you know, we're all okay, really, with whatever Jesus might say, as long as what he says validates what we do, right? As long as we can figure out a way to say whatever Jesus is saying, really, if you knew the Greek, supports my cause. We're okay with that. We're okay as long as we can somehow twist it around to say that our legalism is really what Jesus meant. You know, he really wants us, you know, I know that he's saying it this way, but really what he wants is what I'm doing. As long as we can say, well, he's talking to those people over there in those churches, or he's talking to the people in the bars out here, or even if he's talking to the people in this section, we're okay with that as long as he's not talking to us, as long as he doesn't want us to change anything. But Jesus is pushing things here. And you'll see the disciples are pretty uncomfortable with it. And they're uncomfortable because Jesus is not just defending them. The Pharisees and the scribes have kind of made this attack. You know, they're not washing their hands properly. And Jesus has gone back and forth with them a little bit. And they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But now, Jesus is talking, and he's not just defending them. In fact, it sounds like he's kind of upending the way that they've done things in the past. He's upending, he's standing all of these rules on their head, and they're not sure what's left, what really matters here. And so they ask Jesus what he meant. And I'm always thinking, whenever they do that, I'm thinking, oh, come on. You know, I think it was pretty obvious what he meant. Seems pretty clear to me anyway. But you know what they're doing, don't you? They're hoping somehow that Jesus is going to say, well, you all don't worry about it. Because really what I'm saying is, I'm just saying something to these bad old Pharisees over here. And so you don't worry about it. You're okay. It's a little bit like whenever you call your children down to clean the kitchen. And they're like, Dad, I've already cleaned the kitchen. You've had this happen, haven't you? And you say, no, I want you to come finish cleaning the kitchen. They're like, but we did it. And so you take them around and you say, does that look clean? Does that look clean? This is what clean looks like. Would you eat out of that? You know, you've done the same thing, right? And you're not really showing them anything they don't know. But there was something inside their head that thought, if I protest this, if I have this kind of odd look on my face, I say, really? The kitchen's not clean? That maybe, just maybe, we won't call their bluff. Maybe, just maybe, we won't actually make them do what they're supposed to do. They might get away with something. But we're not telling them anything new. The disciples are saying, what do you mean, Jesus? He's not telling them anything new. He's telling them what they already know. Look at verse 17. When he left the crowd and he entered the house, the disciples questioned him about the parable. This must be a parable, because we surely do not understand, Jesus. Please tell us the meaning of such things. Jesus said, are you so lacking in understanding? Hello? Do you not understand that whatever goes into the man from the outside cannot defile him? Because it does not go into his heart. It goes into his stomach and it's eliminated. And then Mark says, and thus he called all food clean. And so here Jesus just reiterates what he said. And he says it with just a little bit more flair. He says, come on, guys. You know, whatever you eat, you know where it goes, right? I mean, you guys understand this? It goes right through me. Ooh, Peter, was that you? You know what happens to this. Nothing can come into your body that doesn't come back out. Nothing comes in and can defile you. It's the stuff on the inside that defiles you, not the stuff from the outside. And that's good news. I mean, that's really good news. I mean, it says, and he declared all food clean. I mean, that's pretty good news. But it's more than that. You see, the Jews were used to, if you went out into the marketplace, if you went into any place in the world, you had to be careful. Who did I bump up against? What did I touch? If I touch it this way, do I have to wash it this way so it doesn't get inside me? You know, I have to be careful so I'm not defiled. What if I go over to a friend's house and they serve me meat that's sacrificed to idols, and that's bad, and that could like stain my soul? And Jesus says, no, that's not the way it works. Nothing that you outside is going to stain your soul. That's good news. But you know what it also does is it frees us from what people do to us. You know what I'm saying? I mean, what they do to us cannot defile us. To the voiceless, countless kids in our world who are sexually abused by family members, who can't even say anything and they feel entirely defiled, Jesus says, you're not. What they did to you does not defile you. Nothing outside defiles you. Statistically, depending on the statistics you read, 1 in 10 or 1 in 4 or somewhere in between, you never know what about statistics, of women in this room have been sexually assaulted. And Jesus says, whatever they did to you, it does not defile you. It does not define you. That is not who you are. And even though there are religions in our world today, and in fact, there are churches today who would say to some woman who was raped, you are defiled. You're not worthy. Jesus says, you are not defiled. This doesn't change you before God. That's good news. To those of us, to those of you who've been the victim of gossip, who somebody has said something so hurtful and so shameful about you that you think, I can never show my face again. This has so stained me, I cannot do it. Jesus says, no. You are not defiled. That's good news. To the ones who have a cheating spouse who decided to leave and they've left you and you feel dirty and unclean, he says, no, you are not defiled. That's good news. And that no one and nothing outside of you defiles you. If that's not good news to you, you live a very fortunate life. That's good news. Jesus goes on to say what we would probably rather him not. He says, do you not understand that whatever goes into the man from the outside cannot defile him? Because it does not go into his heart, but into his stomach, and is thus eliminated. That which proceeds out of the man is what defiles a man. For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, fornications, thefts, murders, adulteries, deeds of coveting and wickedness, as well as deceit and sensuality and evil and slander, pride and foolishness. All of these evil things proceed from within, and they defile a man. He says, what proceeds out is what defiles, because it comes from within. It comes from who we are. And, you know, it's easy at this point. I mean, it's easy to look at your life and say, hey, look at my life. I obey all the rules. You know, I don't take the Lord's name in vain. I don't get drunk. I don't cheat on my wife. I go to church. I even teach Sunday school. I take communion. I don't smoke or chew or go with girls that do, which would be windy. I don't steal. I don't lie. I follow almost all of the church rules. I am not defiled. And Jesus is saying, that doesn't even factor in. It's not the physical acts that defile us. That's what Jesus is saying. It's the heart within us that does. It's not the horrible words that you might say that defile you. It's the evil thoughts that overflow out of your heart and come out of your mouth. That's what defiles you. You know, it's not the act of sex outside of marriage that defiles you. It's the way that you degrade human relationships to make it all about hormones. That's what degrades you. That's what defiles you. It's not the stealing of money that defiles us. It's a heart that looks at stuff and says, I ought to have that. That ought to be mine. I'm taking that. That's what defiles us. You know, it's not the physical act of murder that defiles us. It's a hate so deep that I would stamp out the image of God in you. That's what defiles us. I mean, you get the idea. Jesus is not, he's not so concerned with what you do, but what makes you do what you do. Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm against fornication, stealing, murder, adultery, coveting, fornication, sensuality, slander, all that stuff. I'm against all of it. And those things are evil. But what defiles us is not what happens on the outside of us, but what has happened on the inside of us. That's what defiles us. It's the decisions we make. It's the love that we fail to show. Those are the things that defile us. Those are the things that condemn our souls. Did you notice the last two things that Paul lists? Pride and foolishness. Actually, it's Mark, but I said in Paul in the first service, so I feel like I need to continue my errors. The last two things that Jesus says, pride and foolishness. You know, you can have pride about a lot of things. You can even have pride about spiritual things. Did you know that? That's what these Pharisees have. You know, you can have pride. You can say, hey, you know what? I wash my hands better than you do. You can have pride and say, I have better doctrine than you do. I practice things the right way better than you do. You know, we follow all the rules. And yet, even if we have all of that together, and yet we've got this pride about it, Jesus is saying, all the following of those rules, it's still the pride that defiles you. It's a big deal. Foolishness. Foolishness is this preoccupation that we get of our heart on foolish things. It's the coming to the end of a powerful worship service and saying, I don't even think he mentioned fathers, which we did, by the way. It's the living in a real and a significant world and focusing on things that don't matter, on foolish. It's like when celebrities go to Africa or something and they're gathering up these kids for a photo op, and just off camera is their makeup person. You know, there's something that doesn't work there. That's foolishness. And that's the kind of thing that Jesus says that defiles us. And we understand that. We understand. It's why you can see good people mess up and you forgive them and you say, man, they are really good people. We're going to continue on with this relationship. And it's also why some people can do good things and you don't trust them. It's because we know that what's in a person's heart matters. Life is more than following the rules. You see what I mean? We are to be a people who are concerned less about what somebody does and more about who they are. And the who takes care of the what. I gave up years ago. I gave up all of the obvious sins. In fact, if you followed me around for a couple of weeks with a pad and paper, you'd find things that you could write down on your paper. They wouldn't be that interesting, honestly. I gave up the kinds of things that preachers preach about years and years and years ago. So none of that stuff really worries me anymore at all. It doesn't even come up on my radar. I have no big sins that if you followed me, you're not going to see anything that's worthy of a headline, an email, even a phone call, nothing. But here's the scary part. The sins, I might look good on the outside because I can follow the rules as well as you can. But the sins that I struggle with are far more damning than those kinds of sins because I struggle with the sins that come from my heart, the ones that really defile me. I struggle because I hate and I lust and I covet and I ignore people and I'm prideful and I focus on foolish things. And those are the things that really defile me, and nobody knows it but me. And you know. Those are the things that really defile me. It's not the kinds of it's not whenever I go 30 and a 25. Those are the things that remind me how much I need a Savior. They remind me that it's not about rules. They remind me that I need somebody who can really cleanse me. Not just make it look okay. It reminds me that I need Jesus. Let's stand.